Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hour number two of After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber here with you. Our producer for tonight's show, Jacob Mustard. The two of us, newbies around here at 96.5 The Fan. I'm in week number two here at the station in the Odyssey Studios here in the Kansas City market. Kansas City kid myself, born and raised in Lawson, Missouri. You know, some of you may not know where that is, and if you haven't had a chance to look it up yet, if you're on north of the city, you're taking 35, you go through like Liberty area, there's a little exit you can take to like Excelsior Springs, and then you continue along 69 north, you'll hit Lawson, Missouri, my tiny little hometown of about 2,500 people. I've been in Springfield for the last 4 years working for a set of stations there, and am beyond thrilled and ecstatic and honored to be back in Kansas City covering the teams I grew up rooting for, in the Chiefs and the Royals, and could not be more thrilled at the opportunity that is in front of me right here, right now. We have our text line available, 913-586-7965. We've been reading these messages throughout the show, and we'll continue to do so. This is such an impressive piece of technology. I absolutely love having this here. It said 573 said that game where the Chiefs ran out of fireworks was the 2020 game against the Texans, where they scored 51 points after going down 24-0. That's right. That's the correct. I think I said 2021 by mistake. 2020. That game was absolutely incredible. Of course, that was that Super Bowl run that was so historic for the Kansas City Chiefs. I had a 6-2-0, and the text line say that they learned this today, that all offensive linemen in college are required to wear knee braces. I never heard that one before. Give Butker one. If he'd wear one, I don't know if he would, but it's not necessarily outside the realm of possibility. I don't think it's a terrible idea. Give Butker a little bit more, you know, something that he can rely on a little bit, technology wise, you know, something that maybe if it makes him more comfortable, absolutely. I don't know if he would wear it, right? Kickers are kind of, you know, they can be a little bit nitpicky in that respect. Not entirely sure. So taking a look now, 913 says, and the Jets will probably hire the top scorer on Madden for their GM. Yeah, they're gonna find some guy through the Madden servers that's won like 29 Super Bowls in his online franchise and be like, yeah, that's our guy. That's our guy. That guy knows Madden. He's got the salary cap turned off, and he has, you know, he's changing everybody's overall to a 99. That's going to be our guy. We'll see. That's not what's going to happen. But Woody Johnson has made some questionable decisions when it comes to the hiring of, you know, executives, quarterbacks. I just want to throw that one out there, making it very well known that I'm not an Aaron Rodgers guy by any stretch of the imagination. 602 says, Lawson Moe, class of 2001. Yes, sir, go Cardinals. It's about 15 years before my time. I was graduate in 2016. Kind of wild to think about the fact that I am quickly approaching a 10-year high school reunion. Did not expect it to go that fast, but there we are. 913 Lance in the text line says, the Chiefs picked up cornerback Steven Nelson. Is he going to play? I don't believe so. I haven't heard anything at all about Steven Nelson to this point. And I mean, I don't even know if is he even on the active roster at this point in the year, right? Is he a practice squad piece? I haven't heard much of anything surrounding Steven Nelson in any way, shape, or form. So no, I am not of the belief that Steven Nelson is going to be playing in this game for Kansas City. Of course, he's a former Chief, you know, back in 2015, Chiefs took him in the third round, where he played from 15 to 18. He left right before a Super Bowl for the Kansas City Chiefs as he went to Pittsburgh after that. you know, he's been primarily like your sort of your nickel or slot corner for a lot of his career. So I don't know. Can he fill that role? Potentially. But now that Jalen Watson's back healthy and you've still got the other guys who have kind of been filling in for him in the interim, along with the All-Pro and Trent McDuffie, I don't think it's all that necessary to throw Steven Nelson into the lineup, especially when he hasn't got a lot of run during the regular season, if any. I think that you stay pretty comfortable with where you're at if you are the Kansas City Chiefs now that you've got Jalen Watson back. Not a lot of need to throw him out there into this realm in the playoffs. I got a story here, you know, one that I find kind of interesting. NBC Sports Pro Football Talk put out a story today or this morning saying that Commissioner Roger Goodell continuing to push for the extended regular season to 18 games. I mean, I don't know. I as a football fan, I would love to see my team play more football games. But dear God, when does player safety become a factor in this scenario? At what point, Roger Goodell and the executives of the National Football League, do we start thinking about what we are doing to our players? Yes, I know that they're making millions of dollars to play a game that we would all love to play and we all love watching and all the things. Goodness. I mean, look at the amount of injuries that we've seen just jumping from the 16 to the 17 game format. If you jump to 18 games, you got to have two bye weeks during the regular. You have to have two bye weeks. And, you know, going back to this, when this first sort of broke, you know, earlier this year, or I shouldn't say earlier this year, early last year, I remember listening to Joe Burrow kind of react to it on a radio show. And, you know, I get that he's the starting quarterback of the Cincinnati Bengals. And while I don't want to see them win, I'm not the biggest Joe Burrow hater out there on the planet. And I thought that he raised an interesting scenario when it came to this 18 game format that they're recommending, where you have the 18 game regular season, you put two bye weeks in, which pushes the Super Bowl back an extra week, right? Super Bowl Sunday then lines up directly with a holiday on that Monday. So everybody would get that Monday off from work anyway, gives people a greater opportunity to enjoy Super Bowl Sunday. I think that's a great idea. I think you could do that without having to push for an 18 game regular season. I don't know. I'm so conflicted when it comes to this proposition. Because as a football fan, as somebody who loves the game, would I love to watch Patrick Mahomes play 18 games a season? Yeah. Of course I would. You'd be insane not to. But guys are getting hurt, you know? I just don't want to see it become more and more prevalent in this league having to play more games. And I certainly don't want to see guys struggle the way that they've struggled after their careers are done. I don't know. I don't really know what to make of that proposal.
It's hard because, you know, as a sports fan, we want to see the players play more. I mean, basketball is talking about cutting down their season from 82 games because of all the injuries and people sitting out anyway. But, you know, we want to see more, but we also want player safety. You know, you wish there was a good mesh of everything, but quite frankly, it's not, and I don't know if there's ever going to be.
No, no, it's a dangerous game, right? Injuries are going to be a factor. They are going to play a role in the game. There's no question about it. I just find it fascinating that the National Football League is really the only professional sports league in North American sports right now that is advocating for longer seasons. They had the 16 game season. They moved to 17. I think that 17 has worked out okay, but injuries are becoming more and more a factor than even they were prior to that, which is a little bit fascinating in that respect. So if you make the move to 18 games and it becomes even more of an issue, meanwhile, you watch the NBA is having serious conversations about going from 82 games, maybe down to 70 games. Okay, Major League Baseball has had those conversations. 162 games, is that too long in regular season? Do we drop it down to 140, 145? You know, I don't know. I find it fascinating to see them increase this thing more and more and more.
I think anything over what we have right now, there should definitely be two bye weeks per team.
No question.
And it's, you know, going to be hard to set up every team's schedule, but have one earlier in the season. Everybody has to have a bye before the midweek point, and then everybody gets one after. It's if you go anything longer than what we have right now.
I mean, it's, dear God, I mean, are we quickly approaching a point where there's too much football being played? I know that's a weird thing to say out loud, but my gosh, look at college football right now. Look at a team like Ohio State. You know, that's a program that is going to be playing in their 16th game of the season. If you had a scenario, say if Penn State would have beaten Notre Dame last week and got to the national champion, they would have played 17 games. In a college football season. 10 years ago, if a team played 14 games, they were playing a lot of football games. I mean, so you got college football programs right now that could potentially in the future be playing a full length NFL regular season, and then they got to turn around and potentially play 18 games in a regular season in the National Football League. And we've seen the NFL in the last 10, 15 years expanding the playoffs, right? Where you've got these wild cards going on. Seven teams in each league now make this, you know, in each conference now make the postseason. So you've got teams that could be playing three, if not four, playoff games if they get to a Super Bowl after going through the wild card round and all those sorts of things. So you're quickly approaching a scenario where you've got college football programs playing 16, 17 games a year. And in the NFL, you could play 21 or 22 games a year, right? You got a 913 saying we typically get to watch Mahomes play 20 games per season. Fair. we've been a little bit spoiled in that respect in doing so. Yeah. And getting to the postseason, but man, an 18 game regular season just feels like a lot to me. It just seems like a lot. And then if you do end up in a scenario where even if you do get the one seed, that's 21 football games in a calendar year. Not even in a calendar. That's 21 football games in 6 months. I don't know.
It would be a lot for anyone's body to handle. Yeah. I mean, it could potentially be too much. It might be.
I don't know. I love the game of football. I love watching it. I would love to see the Chiefs play more. I'd love to see Mahomes go out and do his thing more. No question about it. But I also don't want to see Mahomes suffer more injuries and get more banged up in these scenarios. And, you know, as teams play more and more games and you then have to turn around and get into a playoff situation, if you've got more injuries that you're dealing with, guys are playing more games, guys are more banged up going into the playoffs, who's to say the games are going to be as entertaining, right? Who's to say you're not going to see less offense in games like that because dudes are just they're banged up at that point in the year. I don't know. It's a lot of hypotheticals that we're getting into, but it sounds like from all intents and purposes, via Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports, that Roger Goodell is standing firm on his view that the NFL should push for an 18 game regular season. Should they go to 18 games? You let us know. Send us a message, 913-586-7965. That is our text line. Been reading those messages throughout the show. We will continue to do so through 9 o'clock tonight. You're listening to After Hours on your home for Kansas City Sports, 96.5 The Fan.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I've said it before, I'll say it again. This text line has got to be my favorite part of this job so far. No question about it. I love being able to communicate with our listeners. 913-586-7965 is our number. Had somebody chime in and say, that's proof that hockey players are the toughest out there playing 82 games. Yeah, I don't want to mess with a hockey player. Absolutely not. I see somebody who likes to skate around on cold ice for a living and they are willingly missing teeth. Nope, I want no part. That man is certifiable. All right, I'm going to leave him alone. No question about it. Those are some tough SOBs for sure. Had a 913 say that Steven Nelson is not on the active roster currently. That is the thought that I had. I was fairly certain of that, but I didn't know completely 100% in that respect. So not being on the active roster less than 24 hours before the game, Steven Nelson is not going to go for the Kansas City Chiefs tomorrow, barring something completely outside of the ordinary. This is got to be one of my favorite messages that I've gotten so far. I had a listener a little while ago say that they had graduated from Lawson back in 2001. Said, not trying to bug you at work, but I just found out your mom babysat me in the 90s. I'm sure that's going to make my mom feel super old, and I'm going to make sure that she hears about that. I think that that's hysterical. Absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal that my mom babysat you in the 90s. Huh. That's, I would say good for you. I mean, my mom babysat me for 18 years, still does, right? I'm almost 27 years old, but so, I mean, obviously she did something, right? You're still here, right? So obviously the babysitting didn't go that poorly.
The bare minimum. But hey. I'll take the shout out too, from an 816 for Go Oak Park. Yeah, that was my high school. You, Lawson, me, Oak Park.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Yeah, I feel like babysitting, like rule number one, keep child alive. Rule number two, reference rule number one. That's your whole job. And I give her credit. She did it. She accomplished that goal.
Yeah, she definitely did.
No doubt about it. You know, I gotta say, you know, Twitter's a fascinating place. It really is. I was talking earlier about...
It's one you can get lost on scrolling through for a couple hours, and you'll see some weird things, but then you'll find some interesting stuff,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, there's a lot of good information, but then there's just some of the most outlandish and, you know, small-brained things that you'll ever witness. There's a guy on Twitter that I just ran across. His name is Thomas Delos. I don't know. He's co-host of the Charge Buffalo podcast. You guessed it, he's a Bills fan. Who puts this tweet out? 8 years ago, he was a, quote, project, a potential bust, and not a true franchise quarterback. This Sunday, he has the chance to rewrite history again and change the narratives about him. Time to silence the critics, Josh. Do you recall hearing Josh Allen referred to as a project quarterback when he was taken 7th overall in the draft?
I mean, people said he was a project just because of his, he wasn't the best. Like, he had a cannon for an arm, but he didn't have the accuracy. And people were just kind of hoping that he would develop and see if his running ability would translate.
I don't know. I get a project quarterback who was taken 7th overall. And now has a chance to win a divisional game against the Ravens, and that would rewrite history and change narratives about him. No. If Josh Allen wants to rewrite history and change narratives about him, everybody in the planet knows who he has to beat. Everybody knows who he has to beat. Jacob, care to tell us who Josh Allen has to beat in order to change the narrative about himself?
I'm pretty sure that would be Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, it would be Patrick LeVon Mahomes II. That's who he has to beat. Go beat Lamar Jackson in the postseason. Great, because that's all you do.
He's also facing a quarterback who is facing the same allegations that he is as a non-playoff quarterback factor.
Right.
Great wild card performer, and then the Ravens making it to the AFC Championship the last year, but ultimately crumbled as well.
Think about this. In the 7 years that Patrick Mahomes has been a starting quarterback in the National Football League, there have been exactly two quarterbacks to beat him in a playoff game. Two. Neither one of them is named Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson. Brady. It'd
be Brady and Joe Burrow.
Exactly. Brady did it twice, beat him in 2018 in that AFC Championship game, and then beat him in the Super Bowl in 2021. And then Joe Burrow beat him in the AFC Championship game back in 2022. Those are the only two guys to do it.
All electric games, too. All came down to the wire. Yep. I mean, I get to brag. I was at the game in 2018. That was a That was an electric game.
Oh, so you got to witness the phantom roughing the passer penalty against Chris Jones.
And the quote-unquote muffed punt by Edelman, too.
Mm.
Yeah, I got to see all of those.
Okay, all right. All right, so, okay. I respect that. I respect also, you coming back at me. I do.
I also got to go to, on the flip side of that, I was in Boston, Patriots-Chiefs, what was that, week? I think that was 16, when N'Keal Harry didn't step out of bounds, but they had already used their two challenges earlier. Failed on one, got a successful one, under two, or it was like right before 2 minutes. And, you know, who knows how that game turns out. Then they didn't have to beat Miami, and then they lost the number one seed and all that. Yeah. You know, spirals.
It does. It absolutely does. 816 in the text line says that PM, that being Patrick Mahomes, was also called a project quarterback, too. Yeah, there were a ton of national media people who thought that the Chiefs were insane for trading up to number 10 to take Mahomes back in 2017. What are you doing? You already have your guy in Alex Smith. You need to go out and get a wide receiver or get an offensive lineman. You need to do something because you're one or two pieces away and blah, 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 blah. Why are you going after Mahomes? A guy who has not, I think, I can't remember who it was. I really, off the top of my head, there was one, like, you know, sort of like NFL draft pundit, you know, one of the experts who said that Mahomes doesn't have little footwork. He has no footwork and all these different things. Oh, Mahomes is never going to work. He's got a strong arm, but he's a gunslinger and he's got no footwork and blah, 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 blah. He's unorthodox and he throws it like it's a baseball. Okay. But Patrick Mahomes has quickly proven himself, and Josh Allen beating Lamar Jackson in an AFC divisional round game is not going to rewrite history or change any narratives about his career. Same thing with Lamar Jackson. If he was able to beat Josh Allen this weekend, in order for either of those two guys to be anywhere near the stratosphere of Patrick Mahomes as the best quarterback in this league, you got to beat him. You got to go through 15. And in order to go through 15 this year, the Chiefs got to beat the Texans first. Let's not put the cart before the horse. But if the Chiefs beat the Texans, you not only have to beat Patrick Mahomes, but you got to do it at Arrowhead, which is almost an impossible task throughout the course of his playoff career.
Arrowhead is getting up there like Seattle and the 12th man, and it's become one of the hardest stadiums, and I know it always was, but the Chiefs weren't the best team, so it didn't really come to effect in the playoffs, more or less. But, you know, we're getting to see that environment. You know, Foxborough was also a very challenging place to play. It's an incredible advantage that the Chiefs have coming in with the number one seed, and it's going to be hard, but yes, they will have to go through Mahomes. I just think it's funny that probably 4 or 5, I think we were talking about this Wednesday night. I think all five of the top NFL quarterbacks, any way that you order them, all still coming out of the AFC.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. All right, I just had to kind of get that off my chest. Thomas, okay, yeah, I guess 8 years ago, he was considered a project to some extent. Project for a guy as a top 10 pick. Ah, okay. You know, potential bust, not a franchise quarterback. Okay. But to say that in beating the Ravens on Sunday in a divisional round game is going to rewrite history and change narratives, I don't think that's true. I think everybody who follows the sport knows for Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson, you got to beat Mahomes. You have to beat Mahomes. And this year, if it gets to that point, you're going to have to do it in Arrowhead, which is right now the most difficult place to play in the National Football League. So good luck. Again, our text line, 913-586-7965. When we come back, we've got so much more to get to here in our show. I feel like we haven't had much of a chance. The Kansas City Royals officially announcing their international signings, and it is a lengthy list, ladies and gentlemen. Let me tell you, we've also got three other NFL playoff games going on this weekend. So we want to talk about those. We talked a little bit about Bills Ravens there some, but I want to get a little bit more in depth with that as we come along. And then some phenomenal news. If you're a college basketball fan and you like watching Dick Vitale call games, I'll just leave it at that. This is After Hours on 96.5 The Fan.
From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.
Chiefs, Texans, less than 24 hours away now. A win puts Kansas City in their seventh consecutive AFC championship game, which is just extraordinary. You know, such a far cry from the Chiefs teams that I grew up rooting for as a kid that featured such legendary players like Tyler Thigpen, Brody Croyle. We had a conversation about Dwayne Huard the other day on this show, and I was like, oh my goodness, that's a name I hadn't thought about in years, right? The first Chiefs or Patriots backup quarterback that Kansas City brought in and thought was going to be their savior. Then they tried to replicate it with Matt Cassel, and that didn't work either. But man, those days feel like a lifetime ago at this point. But there are other NFL games going on, right? We can talk Texans Chiefs till we're blue in the face, and we kind of have. I mean, that's kind of been like our exclusive talking point for the first hour and a half of this show on this Friday edition of After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber, our producer for tonight's show, is Jacob Mustard. But there are a trio of other National Football League playoff games going on. The Commanders-Lions game is tomorrow night. That's a 7 o'clock kick on Fox. Detroit, the home club, hosting this one at Ford Field. I mean, I've loved watching this Commanders team play. They've been wildly entertaining all season long. But, man, I don't know. I think that the season pretty much ends for them, right? This Lions team is, they're the better football team. I think in every phase of the game, they're the better football team.
Yeah, and they've been the better team all year. It's why they have the number one seed. And Jaden Daniels has been electric. He's been my favorite rookie to watch, even having Drake May as our quarterback. I mean, there was hope, honestly, that the Commanders took Drake May at two because he's a project quarterback. And, you know, they could. But Jaden Daniels was the win now and the obvious option, the Heisman and throwing for over 5,000 yards in a single season in college. You know, he's looked great, but the Lions are getting fully healthy. Their defense is coming back, and I say fully healthy, and they'll have to wait a little bit for that. But if they make it to the Super Bowl, you could see some return of some key pieces. But I'd love to see an interesting game. I'd love to see a more entertaining than the previous week, because this last week was kind of disappointing. I think the only game that I really enjoyed was the Commanders-Bucks game. But besides that, I mean, I hope the Commanders put up a good fight.
I hope they do as well, right? I mean, they've got a really good secondary, one of the best secondaries in football. They were top five in the league in passing yards allowed per game. So that could certainly make things a little bit difficult on Dan Campbell and this Detroit Lions offense. But then, okay, well, we'll just go to one of our, you know, 1,000-yard rushers in either David Montgomery or Jahmyr Gibbs, and that's certainly a nice fallback option if you're the Detroit Lions. So I just can't see the Commanders winning this football game. And I know David Montgomery didn't get to the 1,000-yard mark. He only played in 14 games. I think if he was fully healthy and had played in all 17, he could have stood a pretty good shot at getting to 1,000 yards this season. But he did have 12 rushing touchdowns in those 14 games that he played. And then Jahmyr Gibbs, who really emerged as one of the best young backs in the National Football League. And Detroit's defense seemingly got better as the year progressed outside of a few, you know, outlier games. They gave up 40 to the Bills in a winning effort, I'll add. But Ford Field is going to be raucous, because this sort of feels like their year, right? If you're a Detroit Lions fan, you got so close a season ago. You were leading at halftime of the NFC Championship game over the 49ers. And then things started to unravel a little bit, and then you ran the fake punt, and things collapsed on you very, very quickly after that. this sort of feels like the year, right? You're not even going to have to face the Niners because their entire team practically ended up on injured reserve at one point or another this year. So they didn't even make the playoffs. Go ahead.
I was going to say, they kind of remind me of the 2022 Boston Celtics, where, you know, they made it all the way but ran into a buzzsaw. They didn't make it all the way, but they ran into the 49ers.
Right.
But they didn't totally collapse. We've seen playoff teams get to those high-intensity games, and then they never make it back. I mean, the Bengals are kind of a really good example of, you know, they made it to the Super Bowl. They lost, and then they haven't made it back or a deep playoff run since. But the Lions are doing it again, and they're showing really good promise of bouncing back, and they're built on that grit and grind. Dan Campbell, bite a kneecap. I know we all make fun of him for that press conference, but they're doing it. And I think his philosophy for going for it on fourth downs is actually going to pay off this year. And we saw it pay off kind of against the Vikings, you know, talking about, we don't want fourth down to be everybody's nervous because we have to execute, because they've executed so many times. They got the nerves out of the way. And a fourth down is just another extra down for them on a drive to keep the drive going.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's sort of it's a hindsight's 2020 situation, right? If that fake punt against the Niners does work, he looks like the smartest man alive. But if it doesn't work, oh, Dan, what are you doing? I can't believe you do that in that situation. Blah, 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 blah.
Sean Payton in the Super Bowl.
Right. Talk about it till you're blue in the face. When it works, you look like a genius. And when it doesn't, you got egg on your face. That's the nature of sports, right? That is the nature of the beast, right? Quarterback throws a one-on-one jump ball to somebody. Guy comes down with it. Oh, what a great throw. Gets picked off. What are you doing? What a stupid decision. That's the nature of sport, right? And you kind of just got to roll with the punches. But Detroit is a 9.5-point favorite in this game. I think it's fair to say Detroit wins this game. Honestly, this is one that I feel somewhat comfortable in saying I think Detroit might be able to cover in this game. I think Detroit could win this game, say 34-21, and get themselves back to an NFC Championship game where they will be the host and they will be the favorite and a chance to go to the Super Bowl for Detroit, which hasn't happened in ever.
Yeah, it's definitely a scenario where, you know, we're hoping that it's a good game from the viewer perspective, but realistically, we could see the Lions up by 35.
Yeah.
And because they have dog walked a couple teams like that. I know there was, you know, a couple memes of bring out the belts. We even saw a belt celebration by St. Brown the other week. That could very well happen again.
It definitely could. All right, that leads to the Sunday games. You start at 2 o'clock, other NFC divisional round game. You've got Rams-Eagles. This one is in Philly at Lincoln Financial Field. Eagles are 6.5-point favorites in this game. And this is one that does fascinate me in some respect. But, I mean, the Rams certainly not doing themselves any favors. I don't know if you saw this earlier today. Jared Verse kind of got himself, you know, a little bit of controversy and a little bit of boiling water because he came out and said he, quote, hates Eagles fans. That was his exact quote. He hates Eagles fans. Oof. All right, Jared. Goodness. I mean, that's a very outspoken statement from a rookie. And the Eagles are a raucous fan base to begin with. Not a very nice fan base either, by any stretch of the imagination. They are very, very passionate about their club. So I'm sure that's just going to add fuel to the fire of the fan base there in Philly. And not only that, you know, Saquon Barkley kind of comes to the defense of the Eagles faithful. And you're going to have to try to tackle him for four quarters. I think the Rams' best chance in this football game, and I talked about this yesterday, you have got to contain Saquon Barkley, right? You're not going to shut Saquon Barkley completely out of a football game. He's that talented a player, and especially with the kind of year he's had with how good Philly's offensive line is. So for Saquon Barkley, in a game where he would typically go for 120 yards on 20 carries, if you can limit him to 70 or 75 yards on those 20 carries, 80 yards on those 20 carries, and make Jalen Hurts beat you with his arm, something that he hasn't had to do all season, I mean, looking at the numbers, Jalen Hurts hasn't had a 300-yard passing game since week three. He hasn't had to throw the foot. He threw the ball 21 times against the Packers last week. Make Jalen Hurts prove to you that he can beat you with his arm, which is kind of what the Chiefs did in the second half of that Super Bowl a couple of years ago, and it paid major dividends for them.
It's also what they did to Jimmy Garoppolo, and it's what the Patriots did to early year Jared Goff. I mean, when you have a system, because that was the Todd Gurley year, when you have a good running back or an amazing running back and who's on one of the best seasons we've ever seen, if you limit them, make the quarterback do something. But you said the correct words. He hasn't had to.
Right.
And Jalen Hurts hasn't had to behind this a tremendous offensive line, creating 2+ yards of separation before Saquon Barkley's even touched.
Yeah.
I mean, they're an insane unit. And just to top it all off, throw in a running back who's one of the best generational running backs that we've seen in the past 10, 15 years.
It's going to be a fascinating matchup, I have to say, in that respect. I really am very, very interested in how that one will play out. And then, of course, you've got the AFC divisional round game, the other, that being Sunday late afternoon, evening, 5:30 kickoff on CBS. Bills-Ravens at Highmark Stadium in Orchard Park. Ravens, 1-point favorites on the road in this game. And I have to say, I agree. I have the Ravens winning this football game. I think it will be somewhere in the realm of, 31-27, 31-24. I like Baltimore in this football game. And the biggest reason why is Derrick Henry. Not just from the standpoint of Derrick Henry and what he provides himself, but what he provides Lamar Jackson. He takes the pressure off of him. Lamar Jackson doesn't feel like he has to do it all by himself, right? Lamar Jackson for years had few weapons on the outside for him to throw to, and he didn't really have a featured back in the backfield beside him. He was running with a bunch of guys that might be number two, number three, number four wide receivers on other teams. Now you've got a solid tight end tandem in Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely. Zay Flowers, it sounds like he's trending towards coming back and being able to play Sunday. We'll wait and see, right? There's still a lot of questionable stuff around that. That's kind of up in the air. But he's got Derrick Henry, where Lamar Jackson doesn't feel like I have to do it all by myself. I like the Ravens to win this football game. I really do. I think that on paper, they are the more talented group.
They definitely have the talent-wise, for sure. And I mean, we were just talking about the Eagles. This is kind of a better Eagles. I saw a post today on the lovely Twitter that we were mentioning earlier that it was just a picture of Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson. They were like, is this a top five backfield? Meaning, a duo quarterback running back at the same time. And they were like, it's not just top five. It's probably top one. I mean, there's not a quarterback running back duo that immediately stands out in my head. And just the dynamic that Derrick Henry brought over with the straight downhill, going to run you over, matches perfectly with Lamar's outside run speed. And it's a very hard thing to stop. I mean, a triple option. And Lamar has proven that he can throw the ball. He's not a running back.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great quarterback. And it's something that the Bills are going to have a extremely, extremely hard time to deal with.
No question about it. This is After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. When we come back, we'll dig into a little bit of these international signings that the Kansas City Royals officially announced today. A list of 22 names, including some guys who could become big-time contributing pieces to the Royals in the future. So that's coming up right after this on 96.5 The Fan. Future, future, future. That's all people seem to talk about in the realm of sports nowadays. What's the potential on a guy? Well, we'll see what happens. The Kansas City Royals agreed to terms with 22 international free agents today and announced them via Twitter this afternoon. A lot of guys from all across the country, most of them from, Central South America. A couple of signings from Colombia, Mexico, Venezuela, several, lots of guys from the Dominican Republic, Panama as well. A couple of guys really headlining this class for the Kansas City Royals, including a catcher from Venezuela, Moises Merchan. He is the number 31 overall prospect in the 2025 international class. That, according to MLB Pipeline, I don't know if I'd want to be a Venezuelan catcher trying to follow up with the organization that signed Salvador Perez back in 2006. That's a tough act to try to overcome. But that's what Marchand is signing himself up for. The Royals also signed two other prospects who are in the top 50 of the international rankings. Warren Calcano, he's the number 38 prospect, and Ramsel Medina, both of whom are shortstops from the Dominican Republic. Now, the rankings are slightly different. Baseball America actually has Calcano as the number 7 ranked international prospect. He signed a $2 million deal with the Royals. Guy that, you know, but 6'2", he weighed about 150 pounds last year, 2 years ago, and people are like, he's got all the tools, he's just got to put on weight. Now he's up to about 165, 170 pounds. They say he's got plus, you know, above average in basically every single part of the field. Power, contact, fielding, base running, arm strength, all the things. But will he be a shortstop? That is the question, right? Because it's not like the Royals are looking for a guy to fill their everyday shortstop duties. Not when you got probably the best shortstop in baseball right now on Bobby Witt Jr. I don't even want to say probably. He is the best shortstop in baseball. So you don't really need a guy to play short every day. So is Calcano capable of playing second? Is he capable of playing third? We'll see, right? Because that doesn't seem like they're going to need a first baseman either. You've already got Vinny Pasquantino. Not to mention, you've got the number one first base prospect in baseball in Jack Caglione making his way into Major League Baseball in the next year or two. Obviously, don't want to rush him in a situation like that. The Royals also signed a couple of twins, infielder Luis Stephen King and outfielder Luis Ramon King, both of which are from the Dominican Republic. So that's kind of a cool storyline there. I mentioned that the Royals signed Moises Merchan from Venezuela. He's a catcher. They signed two other Venezuelan catchers, Richard Mata and Jose Montilla, both of whom are catchers from Venezuela. So I don't know. A lot of interesting storylines to be had there. They signed a handful of pitchers as well. A couple of guys from the Dominican Republic. Three pitchers from the Dominican Republic, to be exact. And then they signed a trio of pitchers from Venezuela. And then Denis Samudio from Panama, another right-handed pitcher. Every single pitcher they signed was right-handed. So I find that kind of interesting as well. Sticking around with, you know, Major League Baseball and whatnot, we're waiting to see what happens in Cooperstown. The Major League Baseball Hall of Fame is trying to track, you know, figure out who this year's induction class is going to be, in with just 5 days remaining until the inductees are announced for the class of 2025, or I should say 4 days remaining, January 21st. There is a platform called the Hall of Fame Ballot Tracker, which tracks when publicly released ballots are made. 392 ballots are estimated. Currently, 163 of those are returned. And you look at the guys who are above the threshold. In regards to Cooperstown and Major League Baseball, you need 75% of the vote in order to get in. Right now, four guys are above that mark, including one who's a unanimous pick. Ichiro Suzuki is on the ballot for all 163 that have been submitted thus far. CC Sabathia at 93%, 152 votes out of the 163. Billy Wagner has almost an 85% vote, 183 out of the 163. Carlos Beltran is also above that 75% threshold at just over 80%, receiving 131 votes out of 163. Of course, Suzuki, it's his first year on the ballot, along with CeCe Sabathia. Beltran on his third run, and Billy Wagner is his last year of eligibility, his 10th and final year. If he doesn't get in, he will no longer be eligible for induction by the Baseball Writers of America, but he will be eligible to be inducted through the era committees in future years. So we shall see. I don't know. I think that all four of those guys are deserving to get in. Ichiro Suzuki, man, especially. That guy was special to watch play the game of baseball. Absolutely unbelievable. I mean, to come in at the age, you know, at making your MLB debut at 27 years old and winning the MVP. I mean, that's unreal. To go out and hit 350 and steal 56 bases and hit 242 hits that year, playing in 157 games, is unbelievable. Absolutely extraordinary. So we'll see. Right now, those four guys are the ones that are tracking towards getting into Cooperstown. One more hour of After Hours on 96.5 The Fan coming at you. Logan Weber joined by Jacob Mustard. Stay tuned. Got a lot more coming up, including college football playoff national championship previews, what we might see on Monday right here on The Fan.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.